This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It is June 1972, a storm over the east coast of the United States. It is early on a Saturday morning at the Watergate complex. A police car pulls up because there's been a call from a man, a security guard named Frank Wills, of something odd going on the sixth floor of the Watergate complex where there are offices. That begins the moment that we remember as the Watergate scandal of Richard Nixon's administration. That moment led to the arrest of five individuals, one of whom was a veteran CIA agent. Four others were associated with the Cuban-American community in Florida. And on January 1973, they were convicted or pled guilty to burglary. However, there were other names attached to this moment, and we will explore the legend of Watergate and the facts of Watergate 50 years later with Max Holland. Max is writing right now on Unheard about what the media gets wrong about Watergate. Still, Max is the author of Leak, Why Mark Felt Became Deep Throat, and he's been my guide on Watergate for many years, so it's a pleasure to welcome him. Max, I turn to that moment that you highlight in the first explication of what we get wrong. It is now during the Watergate hearings of the spring of 1973. On June 28th, I believe that's the date, the senator from Tennessee, Howard Baker, in front of the TV cameras, knowing everybody is going to look at this later on tonight in the replay on PBS, which is how I watched it. We were all younger people then. He asked the important question, what did the president know and when did he know it? 50 years later, that's often quoted as a demonstration of the Republican Party participating in a bipartisan fashion in search for the truth. You have a completely different interpretation of those moments. What was Senator Baker's intention asking that question? Good evening to you, Max.
Thank you for having me, John. Well, John Dean had just been on the witness stand for 3.5 days, being questioned by the Democrats and the chief counsel, Sam Dash, and he had given a devastating portrayal of the first 6 months of the scandal, of the aftermath of the break-in. And not only that, he had a fabulous memory, and he had spent a lot of time reconstructing every event, and it mesmerized everybody who watched it, 3.5 days. However, there was a huge hole in his testimony, which was that he had actually not seen the president alone, except for a brief meeting on September 15th, 1972, when the president congratulated him on limiting the indictments to the actual burglars. But that there wasn't a real substantive discussion. It was just to say, good job, John. His first real meeting with Nixon about Watergate had been in February 73. So Dean, as Baker was quick to hone in on, did not have direct knowledge of what the president knew, said, or did. It was only what Dean thought the president wanted him to do that he was doing. So that's why Baker asked that question. Now, Baker was, I forget his exact age, but he was very ambitious. He intended to run for president. I think he was the youngest person ever elected to the Senate. His father-in-law was Everett Dirksen, the minority leader, and he was as smart as a whip. And so he knew that if he could prevent the Nixon administration from going down the tubes, you know, he would be forever known as that Republican who saved the president. So he came up with the question, what did the president know and when did the president know it? And it was intended as a firebreak to show that Dean did not have firsthand knowledge. And basically it was Dean's word against the president. And, you know, who was right? Well, you had to have some proof, and there didn't seem to be a way to prove it.
Let's do a timeline here. June 17, 1972 is the original break-in. January 73 is when the burglars and their associates, Hunt and Liddy, are convicted or plead guilty. It is now the spring of 1973, and we're reflecting upon events that took place before the election. Richard Nixon is now reelected in his second term, very powerfully reelected, with a great big margin over his competitor. And what we're looking at here is the presumption that Richard Nixon did not involve himself in something as petty as a break-in of the Democratic National Headquarters, where there were no secrets because Richard Nixon was going to win by several million votes. That was the presumption when Mr. Dean brought forward his question. 2 weeks later, who is Alexander Butterfield?
So for 2 weeks after Baker asked his question, you know, there seems to be no way to resolve this, and it looks like Nixon is going to survive the withering, you know, the earth-shaking testimony of John Dean. 2 weeks later, Alexander Butterfield, a obscure presidential assistant that no one had ever heard of, is brought before the committee because when he was questioned behind the scenes, he told another earth-shattering piece of news, which is that there was a taping system in the White House that was voice activated. And if it, you know, turns out to be what he, Butterfield, purports it to be, suddenly there might be an oral, meaning something you could hear, record of what the president knew and when he knew it. And, you know, that's a huge development. And suddenly, Baker's question, you know, which was intended to protect the president, becomes sort of a battering ram against him because, well, the tapes can prove that you, Mr. President, are telling the truth when you said you didn't know about the cover-up.
If and when we hear the tapes, and the president and the law appear to protect the president from revelations of remarks that he made in the Oval Office. It is now the summer of 73, and in the fall of 73, there's now a special counsel. However, again, Howard Baker and his counselor are very keen on protecting the president. Fred Thompson was minority counsel working with Mr. Baker. His firewall is working. Correct, Max? It works all during the summer, all during the fall, because those tapes remain confidential in the White House.
Right. Well, there's a huge lawsuit that goes all the way up to the Supreme Court. So for about a year, you know, Nixon acts to protect the tapes as confidential executive communications. But ultimately, in the summer of 1974, the Supreme Court rules 9-0 against him. Now, before that happens, before the tapes are physically released, Baker and Thompson come up with another idea, which is to use the fact of some CIA personnel or sources who were involved in the burglary and use that to concoct a story that actually the whole thing was a CIA operation.
Remember those five burglars that were caught by the police on the sixth floor of the Watergate. Four of them were Cuban Americans associated with the CIA effort to overturn the regime in Havana. One of them, James McCord, was a CIA veteran. So there was there was a pinch of accuracy in this presentation. And what would that mean if Mr. Baker and Mr. Thompson were successful? How would that work on the Watergate?
Well, that would, you know, the idea was to say, well, if it was CIA operation, then even if the president did engage in cover-up activities, you could hardly blame him for trying to cover up something that he knew he was not responsible for. So, you know, right now, the cover-up is bigger than the burglary itself.
And it's working. It's working because we can't get at the tapes. And the Supreme Court is asked to make the decision. This is the summer of 74. And I mentioned there's geopolitics going on. There's been a confrontation with Russia over a war in the Middle East the year before in which nuclear weapons were considered. There's also the Saturday Night Massacre, the firing of several counsels and layers of the Justice Department, leading to a complete collapse in Richard Nixon's polls. Remember, he was elected in 72 and inaugurated in January of 73 with an enormous victory. And now qualified and torn down at the White House, surrounded by what appear to be either enemies or investigators. And the Supreme Court has the tapes. They ruled 9-0. When they ruled 9-0 to release the tape, there's a particular tape that you identify as a smoking gun. What is it, Max?
Right. This is a tape of a conversation recorded between Bob Haldeman, his chief of staff, and President Nixon. It's just a very few days after the break-in, and they're discussing how to use the CIA to impede the FBI's investigation of the break-in. So it shows that right off the bat, Nixon was involved in the cover-up and trying to obstruct justice. So within, you know, his defense collapse, you know, the answer to Baker's question is, well, the president knew very early on, and he was up to it in his eyeballs. And he's, you know, rather than be impeached, which is what Senator Goldwater and others come to tell him is going to happen, he resigns.
August 9th, 1974. I'm speaking to Max Holland, writing about what the media gets wrong about Watergate. We will turn to the media and the heroes of the Watergate investigation. That is Bob Woodward and his Woodward and Bernstein, which Max calls Woodstein in his book. Others have called it the two working together. When we come back, I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.